The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right, well, welcome to a Friday. We've made it here, some of us anyway. This has been a rough week, but, you know, welcome to another week in the Trump era. People particularly having a rough week are in Puerto Rico, where Donald Trump now understands that Puerto Rico is an island.
This is an island surrounded by water, big water, ocean water.
You know, some would say that it's easier to get supplies into an island surrounded by water than it is to fly into a city. Just, you know, saying. There was more context to that. Here's a little bit more of what he was saying. He was speaking to a manufacturing group trying to tout his tax plan or the outline of his tax plan, the thing that's been presented, all nine pages of it. Here's a little bit more of what he said.
Appropriate departments of our government, from Homeland Security to Defense, are engaged fully in the disaster and the response and recovery effort probably has never been seen for something like this. This is an island surrounded by water.
Water.
Big water.
Big water.
Ocean water.
Ocean water.
We're closely coordinated with the territorial and local governments, which are totally and unfortunately unable to handle this catastrophic crisis on their own. Just totally unable to. The police and truck drivers are very substantially gone.
Substantially
They're taking
gone.
Care of their families and largely unable to get involved, largely unable to help. Therefore, we're forced to bring in truck drivers, security, many, many other personnel.
Yeah.
By the thousands.
Good.
And we're bringing them onto the island as we speak.
So what's the problem then?
We've never seen a situation like this.
You know, he did about a 5-minute intro talking about Puerto Rico before he went on to talk about his tax plan, such as it is. And he must have said, unlike anything we've ever seen before, at least 10 times. I should have edited it to pull those out. But I can't listen to that much of his voice. It's like fingernails on a blackboard. You know what I'm talking about. Did you know? Anyway, there's a guy, I lost his first name, General Honoré, who was the general who actually took charge of the Katrina cleanup efforts and cleaned things up, who was speaking with Anderson Cooper last night on the slowness of the response to the disaster in Puerto Rico.
I heard a conversation earlier today where they indicated that if the task force commander wanted to do airdrops, he could make a recommendation. That's bullshit. Now that that commander Buchanan is on the ground, he need to be given orders and figure out what rules need to be break to save lives. Because this bureaucratic response is not working. With all due respect to the White House, they try to put lipstick on this pig, but this thing is moving too slow, and they don't have it scaled right. We need to have at least 100 helicopters there. We got less than 60 at this time. We need to have 15 ships there. We got less than 10. I mean, we've got to get to moving if they're going to save lives. We could have deployed an airfield opening from the Air Force, and they have the capacity to jump in. They didn't do that.
They didn't do that. And one wonders why not. His name is Russell Honoré, by the way. Thank you in the chat room, House of Roberts. Appreciate the assist. It is tragic what's going on. In fact, the acting Secretary of Homeland Security, Elaine Duke, last night or yesterday said, this is a good news story. I have the mayor of San Juan, her response when she heard that clip in today's What's News. You'll hear it in a few minutes, so I won't repeat it for you. But she was as upset as you can imagine she would be. This is not a good news story. It might be a good news story, but it's not a good news story, which is what Elaine Duke was saying. Well, today she sort of ate those words because now she's down in Puerto Rico. And is they had a press conference in which she said that the response was unsatisfactory. So at least she's getting that. Now, as for Donald Trump, he'll be there Tuesday, but today, after this speech that he gave, I don't even know where it was, he's flying back to New Jersey to go golfing. There is a humanitarian crisis going on U.S. soil. Puerto Rico is a United States territory, and I still don't know if Donald Trump realizes that, as are the Virgin Islands, the U.S. Virgin Islands. Someone must have reminded him of that because he mentioned them in his speech today. But can you imagine if Barack Obama went out golfing during during Sandy, if he just as Sandy was in the height of its misery, he went off golfing. It's like that. And it makes you wonder, why? Is it because Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands are populated by people of color, perhaps? Or maybe it's that the people there don't get to vote in presidential elections. So he doesn't care. And even their representatives to Congress don't have votes. Maybe that's why. But we're seeing this president do a lot of things when it involves people of color that make you question where his head is at. Now, I know his head is somewhat demented. He is a dotard, after all, as we've learned. But a little later on in the program, Dave Zirin's going to be joining us of The Nation at GIF Sports radio show to talk about what's going on with the NFL. And it's not so much about the NFL. It's the way Donald Trump tried to hijack what was a small but potent protest and turn it into something entirely different, pitting black against white. And a listener sent me a video. I don't watch The Daily Show these days, to be honest. I'm just not a Trevor Noah fan. But someone sent me a video of Trevor Noah asking a very important question on this very topic.
Stevie Wonder took a knee on his own time, in his own show. And even then, a former Republican congressman tweeted, "Stevie Wonder takes a knee for the anthem during a concert. Another ungrateful black multimillionaire."
There you go.
Ungrateful to whom? I'm fascinated by that concept. People always say, ungrateful to whom? This idea that black people should be grateful is some sneaky-ass racism.
You think?
Yeah, because when a white billionaire spends a year screaming that America is a disaster, he's in touch with the country. But when a black man kneels quietly, he should be grateful for the successes America has allowed him to have? How is that ungrateful? I don't understand. You know what would be ungrateful? What would be ungrateful is if Stevie Wonder got his sight back and then started complaining about colors. That would be ungrateful.
Ah.
If he was like, hey, man. If he was just like, hey, man, what the f*** is up with pink? That's a garbage-ass color. I'd be like, all right, Stevie, you're being ungrateful, Stevie. You're being ungrateful. Yeah, it almost feels like white people earn the money, but black people are given it.
They play a game for a living. They make millions of dollars. They're ungrateful millennial millionaires who won't stand for their own anthem.
I wish some of these players who get on one knee during the national anthem would get on both knees and thank God they live in the United States of America.
Where they're not only free to earn millions of dollars every year, but they're also free from the worry of being shot in the head for taking a knee like they would be if they were in North Korea.
Okay, wait, wait.
Oh, my God.
You think black Americans are free from the worry of being shot by agents of the state? That's the whole thing that they're protesting in the first place. That's exactly what they're protesting.
That's it.
In fact, if black Americans went to North Korea, they wouldn't get shot just for being black. Just ask Ambassador Dennis Rodman. It wouldn't happen. So again, when is the right time to protest? Well, according to Trump's press secretary, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, it's not the when that's a problem, it's the how that black people are getting wrong.
I think if this is the debate is really for them about police brutality, they should probably protest the officers on the field that are protecting them instead of the American flag.
Oh, I see. Oh, don't protest the flag. Protest the police officers that are on the field. So if you do that, then no one will complain.
Can you just clarify that? Were you saying that? Are you encouraging NFL players to protest police?
No, that's not what I'm saying. I was kind of pointing out the hypocrisy.
Oh, wait, you were just being sarcastic. Well, that's a great use of the White House. Nicely done, nicely done. Yeah, but you see, you still haven't told us the right way for black people to protest. I mean, we know it's wrong to do it in the streets. It's wrong to do it in the tweets. You cannot do it on the field. You cannot do it if you've kneeled. And don't do it if you're rich, you ungrateful son of a bitch. Because there's one thing that's a fact. You cannot protest if you're black.
That's Trevor Noah from The Daily Show. Really good stuff there. All right, we're going to check in with the latest news. We got Dave Zirin coming up at the bottom of the hour. Then we're going to check in with another candidate for Congress. It's a busy Friday, so don't go away. I read the news
today, oh boy. It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Embattled Secretary of Health and Human Services Tom Price issued a qualified apology on Thursday for his penchant for taking private chartered flights. MSNBC's Chris Hayes explains.
In a statement which reads in part, quote, I regret the concerns this has raised regarding the use of taxpayer dollars. I will take no more private charter flights as Secretary of HHS, no exceptions. I will write a personal check to the U.S. Treasury for the expenses of my travel on private charter planes. The taxpayers won't pay a dime for my seat on those planes. My seat. Turns out that, yes, Price plans to just pay for his lone seat of his chartered flights, not the entire bill. HHS says he will write a check for $51,887 out of the reported $400,000 charter flight bill. That's just one-eighth the cost of 26 charter flights he kept taking even after Politico started reporting on his private jet expenses. And tonight, things just got even worse for Secretary Price. Politico reporting that the White House approved the use of military aircraft for multinational trips by Price to Africa and Europe this spring and to Asia in the summer at a cost of more than $500,000 to taxpayers. The overseas trips bring the total cost to taxpayers of Price's travels to more than $1 million since May, according to Politico Review.
Price appeared with Bret Baier on Fox News, who pushed him on the fact that he's planning to reimburse taxpayers only for his seat, not the entire cost of the chartered planes.
You say in the statement the taxpayers won't pay a dime for my seat on those planes, but you're writing a check for, we understand from your officials, $51,887. The total cost is estimated at more than $400,000 for the 26 flights since May. Is that okay?
Well, as I said, there's an ongoing review being done by the Inspector General, and I think it's important that we wait for that review. All of the trips, as I mentioned, had been approved by the legal department, been approved by the administration department within HHS, deemed to be appropriate official travel, and so we need to let the Inspector General go ahead and act.
So a non-answer. Meanwhile, now it's Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke coming under scrutiny as the Washington Post reports that he flew on a private plane owned by oil company executives at a cost of over $12,000 to taxpayers from Las Vegas to near his home in Montana this summer, that on top of private flights between the U.S. Virgin Islands in March. Zinke joined several Trump cabinet secretaries, including EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt, Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, in addition to Tom Price, whose travels have been questioned by agency inspectors general, members of Congress, and the public. CBS News reporting that the U.S. is pulling around 60% of its staff out of Cuba and is warning Americans not to visit due to sonic attacks that have harmed U.S. diplomats. A State Department travel warning will note that attacks on diplomats have occurred in hotels. Officials say the U.S. is halting visa processing in Cuba and that these steps will remain until Cuba can assure the U.S. its diplomats are safe. The situation in Puerto Rico is getting more dire by the day. Acting Secretary of Homeland Security Elaine Duke on Thursday claimed that the disaster relief was going well and called it a, quote, good news story.
I am very satisfied. I know it's a hard storm to recover from, but the amount of progress that's been made, and I really would appreciate any support that we get. I know it is really a good news story in terms of our ability to reach people and the limited number of deaths that have taken place in such a devastating hurricane.
On CNN Friday morning, San Juan Mayor Carmen Yulín Cruz reacted.
Well, maybe from where she's standing, it's a good news story. When you're drinking from a creek, it's not a good news story. When you don't have food for a baby, it's not a good news story. When you have to pull people down from their buildings, because, you know, I'm sorry, but that really upsets me and frustrates me. You know, I would ask her to come down here and visit the towns and then make a statement like that, which frankly, it is an irresponsible statement, and it contrasts with the statements of support that I have been getting since yesterday when I got that call from the White House. This is not a good news story. This is a people are dying story. This is a life or death story. There's a truckload of stuff that cannot be taken to people's story. This is a story of a devastation that continues to worsen because people are not getting food and water. If I could scream it a lot more louder. It is not a good news story when people are dying, when they don't have dialysis, when their generators aren't working and their oxygen isn't providing for them. Where is there good news here? I mean, the good news is that we're getting hurt. The good news is that there's boots on the ground. The good news is that the people from FEMA have their heart in the right place and the HHS people know what to do. For heaven's sake, somebody let them do their job. Let them get the food and the water in the hands of people. And then let's talk about good news. Really sorry. But, you know, when you have people out there dying, literally, scraping for food, where is the good news?
You can help the people of Puerto Rico by donating at mariafund.org. I got good news. And that's a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler for NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network. All right, now it's time to check in with our friends at the Talk Media News Service, TalkMediaNews.com, to see what else is going on. Doug Christian, are you there?
Yes, Nicole. It's a pleasure, as always, to speak with you.
And you? So, DHS Secretary Elaine Duke is now down in Puerto Rico, and she's singing a different song today.
Well, she's more deaf than our diplomats in Cuba, who were made deaf by those sonic attacks. She is tone deaf to what's going on, the mayor of San Juan is saying this is not a good story. It's been mentioned many times. This is becoming like Katrina, but it could get worse.
Worse.
People could be dying, and there is no communication at all. It's just horrific, and I mean, I guess the administration thinks out of sight, out of mind, but.
That's the way they're acting. And Donald Trump went to play golf today. He's going to golf for the weekend.
It's sickening. And he always just praises himself. Oh, the governor of Puerto Rico says I did such a great job. Who cares? I mean, this reminds me exactly of when George W. Bush said that Brownie was doing a heck of a job.
Right, except...
That didn't play... Yeah.
Where's the criticism? Except from the left. I mean, it seems like Fox News is afraid to criticize. And you know, that's why I played that whole clip from the mayor of San Juan, because, you know, she heard what Elaine Duke said, and that was her honest reaction, and good on her. I mean, she said the things that needed to be said there.
Thank you for playing the entire clip. I mean, so oftentimes that clip gets abridged because everybody's pressed for time in media and television and radio, so people just hear bits of it. But
right.
Thank you for playing the whole thing, because people really need to hear just what a desperate situation this is in Puerto Rico. This is a more serious situation than the NFL fight, than anything.
Than
right
anything.
Now, because, yes, I mean, this is people dying. And this is just, I mean, who cares about security overseas if we can't even take care of our own citizens at home?
Right. And so yesterday we heard that the president had lifted the Jones Act temporarily. You know, they did for Florida and for Texas after Irma and Harvey. That's this 100-year-old law that says only American-owned ships under American flags can deliver goods from one U.S. port to another. Except it was only lifted for 10 days in Puerto Rico. And the problem is not things getting into port. The problem is getting the containers from the port onto the island. They don't have the trucks. They don't have the diesel. They need the diesel to be brought in by the ship, but they have no way to get the diesel from the ship to the gas stations to get the trucks gassed up to go and get the stuff. They have a real crisis there with no one seeming to know how to fix it.
You're absolutely right, and the mayor of San Juan spoke of that. She said, "We've got stuff. We don't have any way to transport it."
Right.
And also those roads in the middle of Puerto Rico, those roads are curvy mountain roads. I mean, they're hazardous in the best of times. But the idea that somehow that trucks could navigate those roads in the interior in the middle of Puerto Rico, I don't see how. I mean, that is in itself a problem.
Right. Well, now they've got the army supposedly in charge down there, and hopefully things will get worked out a little bit, because it seems like for the first 10 days there was nobody running the operation.
No, there was nothing. All there was, and it's just it's sickening that the administration was just praising itself.
Yeah.
I'm doing a great job. Great job. Oh, it's just terrific. I'm like, who cares? This is tone deaf. And of course, he was doing the same thing for Houston as well.
And Florida.
And when will Americans wake up to this and say, enough of this already? We need a leader, somebody who's actually going to take this. And also their excuse is just astonishing. They said, well, there's water. It's an island, so we can't do this. I'm thinking to myself, this reminds me of the bravery of Donald Trump's son, who go hunting for lions that are pet lions. They're raised in captivity. But those lions don't have guns, so they are not able to shoot back. And I'm thinking this is the same kind of bravery here, where with trying to say, well, you know, there was a storm. Well, there's an island. There's excuses. No, like, oh, my gosh, there's a disaster. We need to take care of it. None of that.
Right. Well, I played a clip a little earlier of General Russell Honoré. He's the general who finally fixed things with the response to Katrina. And he's like, they should be dropping supplies from planes to these remote areas where they can't get the trucks to. They need to do something. He said everything that, you know, all these excuses are just bullshit, he said right out on the air on CNN.
Yeah, that's the word he used.
Yes, he did.
And he was quite smart in his language. And he was credited with turning the Katrina rescue mission around.
Yes.
So, and I mean, I don't know what's going on. I mean, I just don't understand how this administration or even Congress believes that they can somehow there's not going to be backlash if they don't do something. Once the reports come in of the actual devastation of what has happened and how they have ignored this, I just, I, I'm just dumbfounded. I'm saddened for our fellow humans in Puerto Rico. You know, they have to put up with it.
And it's not only Puerto Rico. Here we are finally talking about Puerto Rico, but we've got the U.S. Virgin Islands. You got St. Croix, and I think St. John's is the other island there. That total devastation, and we're not talking about them at all.
No, and that's described, literally they described it as a war zone. As though a bomb had been dropped.
Mm-hmm.
No greenery left in St. John. I mean, just completely. All the trees were stripped. So it was a 60-mile tornado.
Right.
The winds were that fast.
Yep.
I mean, the urgency of this couldn't be more pressing.
And yet, you know, here's Donald Trump, who criticized Barack Obama for golfing constantly when Obama was president. And he's actually, during the midst of this major crisis, probably the biggest one of his presidency thus far, and he's leaving today to go to his golf club in New Jersey.
And also, it was Barack Obama who, in fact, rebuilt FEMA, so that, in fact, Trump is taking credit for all the good work that FEMA is able to do, but that's due, by the way, to Barack Obama, who actually really worked to make sure that we had the kind of emergency management for such a disaster. Now, FEMA's hands are tied. I mean, we can only do so much right now. We need. And also, we don't need the president's go visit on Tuesday.
No.
I mean, because that takes a huge amount of resource.
That's
whenever
right.
You have a president visiting. That means all the people that could actually go and be rescuing lives have to protect this guy.
And all the people that could be getting out. This will close down the airport. They barely have a functioning airport. This will shut it down for all intents and purposes, so that people who would, supplies coming in and people getting out, that's going to be held up. By the way, Doug, do you know about the story about people who are being evacuated, citizens who are getting out on military transport are being charged the full fare, the full commercial coach fare, not discount fare, but the full fare that they have to pay back to the U.S. government. And if they can't pay it, they're taking their passports when they get to the mainland until they pay off that the price of the ticket. Have you heard about this?
I had not heard about it.
Yep.
It's just sickening if that's the case.
I mean, the case.
This is and I cannot say that this doesn't just reek of racism, because I mean, I just can't imagine that if this happened in a more kind of white community, that anybody would tolerate this. It's sickening, frankly, and we should be ashamed that we are treating our fellow citizens like this.
Well, some of us are.
It is bizarre. And I had not heard of this, but that is just, I mean, it's just revolting, frankly. I mean, what are they paying their taxes for?
Exactly.
If they don't get help when it's needed.
Yeah, that's a really good question.
Yeah, and by the way, that's the biggest argument that Republicans make. They say, well, you know, government should do nothing, but it should protect the citizen. Okay, then protect the citizen. If that's how you actually feel, then do that. Protect the citizen and live up to what you say.
Mm-hmm.
But then don't say, don't claim that and then say, well, we didn't really mean it.
Ah, now Robert Hill in New York City in the chat room is saying that story was debunked, that it was true for about 50 people from the Dominican Republic, that he read it somewhere reputable last night, that story was debunked. But I heard it again today. So
okay.
I had heard that it was true, then I heard it wasn't true. There's a lot of misinformation out there. I hope it is not true. But I just heard something on Tom Hartman's show about them taking passports from U.S. citizens and holding on to them. So...
Tom is a credible source,
right.
And you know, he, you know, again, though, it's worth double checking, because
yes.
you know.
I will look into that over the weekend, because that's a story that's just despicable. Now, the question is, are they taking citizens out on those transport planes? I know that they're not able to get on the commercial flights that are going out because all the computers are down, and they just can't coordinate, you know, passenger here, empty seat there, put them on and fly them home or fly them out. It's just not all working. Anyway.
Exactly. And even senators visiting right now, they just shouldn't. I mean,
well, they're not. That is something that the Trump administration said they don't want any members of Congress going down there now, and probably because they were coming back with a lot of criticism. Anyway, Doug Christian from the Talk Media News Service, talkmedianews.com, thank you so much.
Thanks, Nicole.
All right, I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You bet.
We're going to change gears, but not that drastically, because, well, we're talking about racism. And that's what I believe is at the heart of this, the protest, not the NFL protest. Well, it is what's at the heart of the NFL protest, but for Donald Trump to go after the players who are taking a knee, who are protesting.
Hey, Dave.
Hey, Dave Zirin.
Dave Zirin here. Uh-oh. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. I hear a little echo.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's just a little. It's less now.
Okay.
Now it's gone. Now it's
gone.
Oh,
good.
Great.
Well, good. Okay. Dave Zirin is the sports editor at The Nation, the host of the Edge of Sports radio show, and co-host of The Collision, where sports and politics collide. Now, Dave writes and talks about that collision, which is happening right now in a way we really haven't seen before, Dave, as Donald Trump has twisted the protests of Colin Kaepernick and others who followed his lead in taking a knee. How do you describe? It is something. I heard you say it's a mishmash or something, because of the way Colin Kaepernick's original protest is being perverted now by Donald Trump.
Yeah, although I wouldn't put the entire weight of that on Donald Trump. I think the NFL owners deserve a great deal of the blame for this because, and I can't believe this, but I'm always down to trash Donald Trump, but this really isn't on him. Donald Trump on Friday was just doing what Donald Trump does. He was being a bombastic racist, and he was attempting to isolate and demonize and even destroy the 9 or so players who've been taking a knee or sitting down during the anthem as a way to raise awareness about racism and police brutality. That was Donald Trump's mission. Now, the NFL, it started with the players coming together in solidarity to respond to what Donald Trump did. And then the NFL and their owners, you know, in the face of all of this pressure, and, you know, they don't respond well under pressure at all. These are not diamonds, the people who run the NFL. They are not coal that becomes diamonds when under pressure. They crumble like coal without diamonds. And so what they did was they then have been like rapid fire organizing these protests into like shows of unity and kneeling before the anthem and then standing up. And so what you've, instead of a debate, which in a different world, maybe Trump's racist rants could have actually accelerated and highlighted, which is the debate between Trump saying, you know, America, love it or leave it, and another side saying, well, wait a minute, you know, America is not fulfilling its promises because there are people who live under a different set of laws because of the color of their skin. Like, if that could have been the debate. And instead, it became like competing bumper stickers. The kind of liberalish protest is patriotic versus Trump's stand or die.
Right.
And so, you know, while Donald Trump is disgusting and he's poured gasoline all over this and now players are getting death threats, and that falls on Donald Trump, the violence that he has unleashed and the nastiness and the profanity, it's really the NFL with all of its hyper-patriotism and jingoism that subsumed what the original message.
Now, the original message, which was that mostly black men are being killed by mostly white cops who are then getting away with it, and is being lost in this fake controversy over whether or not it's disrespectful to stand for the national anthem and salute the flag.
Yeah, no, and that's ridiculous in and of itself. And, you know, when you make it about that, Donald Trump, it shouldn't surprise us that that Donald Trump was making it about that, because he's a gutless worm. But what is surprising, and not surprising, but what's so discouraging, is the way that the NFL has repackaged this. Because, I mean, that's the real shame and sin here, is the erasure of what this message needs to be, and the erasure of the heroism at play. I mean, you have NFL owners linking arms with players, or in Jerry Jones's case, taking a knee. I mean, the same people who are blackballing Colin Kaepernick now get to assume their place on the front lines. Like, are you kidding me? I mean, are we really seriously seeing this? The owner of a team that's named after a racial slur in Washington
right.
gets to stand as if he's some sort of force against racism? Are you kidding me? I mean, this is bad. This is a complete co-optation of what was originally being fought for. The only positive that I see, and I actually do view this as a real positive, is that you and I are not the only people having this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I've been very, very heartened by the number of mainstream sports writers in big city newspapers who are writing very similar columns to what we're discussing about what is the original message and what are we trying to do. Like one of the big ESPN radio hosts, I just retweeted him right before we came on the air. He was responding to some article that just said, "Some bars not showing games because of anthem protests." And the response by Dan Lebatard, who, like I said, is a nationally known radio host,
mm-hmm.
was immediately, it was, "All that's good and holy, stop calling them anthem protests. They are not protesting the anthem."
Right. Good for him. So people are seeing
yeah.
it, and they're speaking out, and that's the good news. And it's also it's moving. You wrote today at The Nation about the Oakland A's catcher Bruce Maxwell being the first baseball player to join in the protest, and you write that baseball has traditionally been very much more conservative than, say, the NFL or the NBA, some of whose players have also been taking a knee for the right reasons.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Major League Baseball has a long tradition of conservatism, which we forget sometimes because of figures like Jackie Robinson or Roberto Clemente. But those guys were outliers in a big way. It's not like they were swimming in solidarity. So, I mean, Bruce Maxwell taking this step is amazing. Fortunately, he plays for Oakland, Nicole, just like Colin Kaepernick played for San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
So they get that Bay Area support, which I don't know if Bruce Maxwell would have in other cities. But I'll tell you this, like, there is more value in one person doing this, like Bruce Maxwell, for very clearly articulated reasons than there is for hundreds of people doing it for reasons that are just straight up mush.
Right. Mush, that was your word. So today, Dave Zirin is with us. Donald Trump tweeted out, "Spoke to Jerry Jones of the Dallas Cowboys yesterday. Jerry is a winner who knows how to get things done. Players will stand for country." Actually, this whole thing of they locked arms and kneeled before the anthem and then stood up with their arms locked for the anthem, that happened on Monday night for Monday Night Football. And now this is a thing that other teams are doing. Did they do last night?
Yeah, no, last night it was the Green Bay Packers against the Chicago Bears. And what they did was they had Green Bay quarterback Aaron Rodgers asked all the fans to link arms during the anthem, and the players linked arms during the anthem. And there was a particularly massive American flag on the field.
Oh.
And, I mean, I was looking at that, and I was just thinking, like, only the NFL could take a protest against racism and turn it into even more nationalism.
That's unreal.
Which is what we had on display. And, you know, it's just one of those things where the original thing gets perverted by forces who have no interest whatsoever in the original message. They have no interest in it. They don't want it. And, you know, Donald Trump, I would argue, like, he got bit back very hard. He did not expect the NFL as a whole, including 7 million, seven donors to him who own NFL teams who gave him over $1 million each. He didn't expect these folks to bite back at him, and they all did bite back at him. And I think that's why he's been backtracking so furiously. And, you know, he stopped saying he wanted a boycott, and You know, even his tweet about Jerry Jones to a degree is a concession that he can't stand opposite the NFL on this. Unfortunately, I would argue the reasons he can't stand opposite the NFL have much more to do with it being divisive and with the fact that a lot of his big donors are NFL owners than having anything to do with any genuine commitment whatsoever to have a discussion about racism. And this is who Donald Trump is. It's absurd to me when people say, like, well, why are they protesting during the anthem? And, you know, and it's like there are other ways to get attention. And it's like, no, that's actually not true. Like, there has been a clamor for attention around this issue for years. And if this is what it takes to make people uncomfortable and wake up, then these players are going to do it. Unfortunately, you can't have a situation where people are waking up or being made uncomfortable, and then the message is what? The message is, we stand for patriotism. I mean, there's just no there.
Right.
And it's like the you know, it's like the, it's like seeing a protest get gentrified.
That's exactly what it is. That, and I'm curious, has Colin Kaepernick said anything about what's going on now? Or has he been quiet?
Yeah, no, he's been quiet. People should look at his Twitter, look at what he's retweeting. He's not saying anything in particular, but he is retweeting some very interesting stuff. And I think the thing that galls Colin the most is that, you know, he really does want to play. There's such a perversion at work here, because you have the very people who are keeping him from playing now get to, like, pose as social justice warriors against racism. And I think that for him and people around him is truly the most galling part.
But are they posing as social justice warriors against racism, or are they taking Donald Trump's they're standing up for the
racism.
Flag. They're just standing up for the flag,
right.
And so and the military and things that this was never about in the first place.
Right. No. That's absolutely right. And it's more just, I say that, like, my frustration thinking
right.
about the Sports Illustrated cover that says Sports United, and they photoshopped this picture that included Roger Goodell linking arms with Golden State Warrior Steph Curry. And Steph was even, like, responding and saying, this is absolutely absurd. I don't want to be linking arms with Roger Goodell. And Steph Curry also raised the point, as did his coach Steve Kerr, where the hell is Colin Kaepernick on this cover? So Colin Kaepernick gets erased. I mean, people are going to be talking about this, I promise you, in college classrooms for years, like media studies classes, where you look at this and you see Colin Kaepernick being erased and Roger Goodell being put on the front lines.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And there is a story that Donald Trump wanted to buy a football team at one point, and he was not allowed to by the NFL.
Yeah, he wanted to just 3 years ago, really.
Wow.
I mean, he wouldn't be president if they'd let him do this.
Damn.
But that's the thing about NFL owners. You know, they view Donald Trump as way too tacky to own a team. These are right-wing billionaires, but
mm-hmm.
they're right-wing billionaires who like to do their work in shadows. They, you know, it's the same reason why they wouldn't let Rush Limbaugh
right.
Own a team when he made an effort to buy the St. Louis Rams about a decade ago. It's because, you know, they found him to be too noxious, too tacky, too public, and his finances to be too bizarre to really understand, like, if they wanted this guy in their particular very exclusive fraternity.
Amazing.
So, you know, this is where we are. This is who Trump is. And I'm sure that part of his peak at the NFL has to do with the fact, you know, the same reason why he doesn't like Hollywood is that, you know, he's the ultimate, like, star sniffer, if you will, who, you know, they don't want anything to do with him because they think he's disgusting. And it's the same thing with NFL owners. And so all we get are his, you know, petty grievances, which his base, which lives in this perpetual state of grievance, takes all too seriously.
Dave Zirin, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. I know you've had a busy day and a busy week. Real quickly, any idea what we expect this Sunday to happen?
I mean, next Sunday, I think you're going to see some more protests. I think it's going to be confused. It's going to be all over the place. Some players will kneel and say they're doing it for all the right reasons. I'm actually glad the Dallas Cowboys aren't going to kneel. because, you know, the more players who aren't doing it for these abstract mushball reasons, the better, because then there's a better chance for the actual message to get out.
And hopefully the broadcasters will do their jobs and talk about what the real reason the players who are kneeling for, and call, as you say, there many of them are. So that's at least some justice there.
No, that's absolutely correct. And let's so. I will say that some, not all, announcers actually did a terrific job last week in trying to explain this stuff. So there you go.
Good to know. Dave Zirin, always appreciate your time and your expertise. I appreciate you coming on with us today.
Oh, thank you so much, Nicole.
Thank you, Dave. Have a great day. Bye-bye. Dave Zirin of The Nation, of, you know, I love the fact that The Nation has a sports editor. And he does look at sports through the prism of politics and the intersection of sports and politics. He also hosts the Edge of Sports radio show. You can find him at edgeofsports.com and on Twitter at Edge of Sports. We're going to take a very, very quick break. Yeah, he said star sniffer. I think he was trying to be politically correct. I'd say star fucker, because that's what Donald Trump is. Anyway, I'm going to try to get my voice back. We'll take a quick break and come back and talk with another, a real progressive, another Blue America PAC endorsee who's running for Congress, this one from Indiana. We'll be right back.
From 1776 forward, Americans have opposed having soldiers do police work on our soil. But in recent years, Pentagon chiefs have teamed up with police chiefs to circumvent that prohibition. How? Simply by militarizing police departments. Through the little-known military transfer program, the Pentagon has been shipping massive amounts of surplus war equipment to our local gendarmes. This reflects a fundamental rewiring of the mindset now guiding neighborhood policing. Police chiefs today commonly send out squads brandishing heavy arms and garbed in riot gear for peaceful situations. Recruiting videos now feature clips of SWAT team officers dressed in black, hurling flash grenades into a home, then storming the house, firing automatic weapons. Who wants anyone recruited by that video working their neighborhood? As a city councilman in rural Wisconsin commented when told his police were getting a 9-foot-tall armored vehicle, somebody has to be the first to say, "Why are we doing this?" The New York Times reports that the town's police chief responded that there's always a possibility of violence. Really? Who threatens us with such mayhem that every burg needs a war zone armory and a commando mentality? Astonishingly, a sheriff's spokesman in suburban Indianapolis offered this answer: veterans. The sheriff's department needed a mine-resistant armored vehicle, he explained, to defend itself against U.S. veterans returning from the Afghanistan war. War veterans, he said, have the ability and knowledge to build homemade bombs and to defeat law enforcement techniques. This is Jim Hightower saying that is lame, loopy, insulting, shameful, and just plain stupid. Maybe he just forgot to pack his brain when he left for work that day, but I'm afraid it's a window into the altered mindset of police chiefs and trainers.
If you like these feisty pops of populism that Hightower zings out on the airwaves, check out the Hightower Lowdown. Jim's monthly newsletter provides the in-depth lowdown on what the greed heads of Wall Street and the boneheads of Washington are doing to us behind the scenes. With Hightower's saucy Texas humor and truth-telling populist perspective, the lowdown literally can lift you up. And get this, you can have the lowdown delivered to your mailbox or email each month for only $15 a year. Yes, 12 issues, only 15 bucks. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
You're listening to The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
All right, we are back, and I'm happy to have on the line Dan Cannon. He is another Blue America PAC endorsee, courtesy of our friend Howie Klein over at Blue America, running for Congress from Indiana. Hi, Dan. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Nicole. Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, thanks for being here. What is the district that you're running in?
So the district is a big swath of south central Indiana. It goes from the Ohio River bordering Kentucky, close to Louisville, Kentucky, I think is the closest place your listeners would probably know.
Okay.
And it goes from my hometown of New Albany, Indiana, all the way up to South Indianapolis. It's about a 2-hour stretch in any direction.
So that's Indiana's 9th congressional district. And so Donald Trump was in your neck of the woods yesterday, huh?
Yeah, that's right. This is of course the home territory of Vice President Pence. So
Yes it is.
They believe that the Senate seat here that is held by Democrat Joe Donnelly is vulnerable. We'll see about that.
Well, I guess Joe Donnelly is pretty conservative though, isn't he?
I think what you might call more of a centrist. Yeah.
That's
an understatement.
You are a progressive, and my listener, Howie's regularly on this program every Thursday, so my listeners know for a candidate to be endorsed by Blue America, you've got to be a true progressive, because Howie does a great job of vetting candidates. And I got to say that on your website at Canon, with one N, C-A-N-O-N, for Indiana.com, you have probably the most extensive list of issues on a candidate's website that I've seen. And thank you for that, because a lot of times we don't know what a candidate is all about, and you can pour through a website and still not know. But you're pretty out there, honest with your positions, and they are quite progressive. What's most important to you?
Well, you know, and I'm glad that you said that about the website, Nicole, because I think it's really important that candidates in the heartland in particular, and in places that have been considered to be more traditionally conservative, I think it's even more important for us to run on progressive platforms if that's the stuff that we really believe in.
Because
we've been taught for so long that we need to run to the center, and that we need to try to please all the people all the time, and that we need to avoid the sort of hot button issues, the stuff that's really important to not only me but to everybody in my district, stuff like universal health care, and stuff like a raise in the minimum wage, stuff like paid family and medical leave. I mean, stuff that would really affect and really help the people in my district. We've been taught to run away from those issues. And I think we do ourselves a great disservice by not talking about those things and by not being very clear that that's what we stand for, because this is the stuff that's really going to help working families in Indiana. And if we don't, if we run from that and we never talk about it, and we never get to convince anybody that we are right about those programs, those policies, and those principles.
You're absolutely right. So what you mentioned universal health care. You mentioned raising the minimum wage. What other issues are top of mind to you? What else is of great import?
Obviously, well, there's a lot. There's a lot that needs to be done, obviously. And you know, I think that we probably don't have enough time to get into every single thing. I wish we could. You know, having now been on the campaign trail for as long as we have, I've gotten to really see how the sausage is made with regards to campaign finance. And look, you know, the way in which we do this, is absurd, frankly, in America. As a congressional candidate, you know, I spend hours and hours a day asking people for money.
Right.
You know, the guy that's the incumbent in my district is independently wealthy. He comes from multi-generational wealth. And it gives him an automatic advantage in our political process, which is, I mean, you know, it's an absurd way to do things. You know, I think that for anybody that is thinking about supporting any candidate in any way for any reason should make sure that candidate has got campaign finance reform right at the top of their list of issues that they intend to deal with once they're in office. It's something that is really critical and becoming more and more critical to preserving American democracy, that we get this monster dealt with.
Without a doubt. You know, today is the end of the quarter. I was going to say, shouldn't you be dialing for dollars today? That's what the DCCC would have you be doing right now.
Well, and we're doing it. We're trying to tackle this battle on all fronts. You know, but we've got volunteers that are currently phone banking. We've got volunteers that are out knocking doors, and we're trying to, you know, really engage people and try to deal with problems as we see them on the ground and do the kind of stuff that elected officials ought to be doing too, and not just being a money machine. Now, that said, if anybody wants to kick in on our website before, you know, tomorrow at midnight, mm-hmm. that would be great too.
And that's canonforindiana.com, canon with one N, just getting it out there. You're also calling for nationwide automatic voter registration, you know, which obviously we certainly need, especially at a time when, you know, the current administration is trying to purge people from the voter rolls by way of this Kris Kobach voter integrity panel, an Orwellian name if I ever heard one.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, I also see removal of marijuana as a Schedule I substance under the Controlled Substances Act. That's long overdue.
Yeah, absolutely, and something that has a lot of bipartisan support, actually, especially among, if you talk about people that are here on the ground in Indiana and in the heartland and all over the region, you know, there's a lot of support for that issue in particular. So I think it's just something that is this outdated relic of the past that we need to do away with.
Yeah, there's another one. You have abolition of the Electoral College. Please,
yeah,
I wish they would have done
again, another anachronism. Yeah.
There are lots of them. I could go. I'm scrolling down and down and down. And unlike most other candidates, you have them under policies, lots of different issues that, you know, you believe in. And I got to thank you for putting this all on your website. I want to ask you real quickly about your background, because your background is unusual. You've lived, it seems like, a few lives in one.
Yeah, I guess so. So I grew up in rural Indiana, in the middle of nowhere, and then we moved to the big city of New Albany, Indiana, which is where I now live. It's about 30,000 people, right across the river from Louisville. And grew up son of a single mom, and was raised by her until I was 17, and then I dropped out of high school when I was a junior, and sort of kicked around for a while. I got my GED. Put myself through college, and I was the first person in my family to graduate college. And then I went to law school, and I did that having not ever known a lawyer, probably never had a conversation with a lawyer ever in my life up to that point. But I went, and it was important to me to be able to get out and to represent people in my community and to give a voice to people who would not otherwise have it. I mean, I grew up with a lot of people that never had any kind of access to the justice system in any way, shape, or form. And it was just something that, you know, was a concept and some, you know, faceless thing that existed outside of them. And it was really important to me to go and represent people and, you know, give them a voice within that system. And that's what I intend to do as a representative in Congress, too.
Did you actually argue before the Supreme Court?
I have not. I did not argue the marriage case before the Supreme Court. We have enjoyed some successes, including the marriage equality case that went up into what they call Obergefell versus Hodges.
Mm-hmm.
A team of those plaintiffs were my clients.
Ah.
So we were fortunate enough to be there at the Supreme Court, front and center. And the case itself was argued by a woman from Maine named Mary Bonato, who's just a brilliant advocate. But we participated in all the briefing and all the prep for the argument and everything else, and it was something to be very proud of.
Absolutely. So now the election, when is the primary for Indiana? I mean, we're still a long ways away, so you're getting out on this early, right?
Yes, ma'am. I think that's what we got to do. We got to get a jump on things. We got to get out there, talk to people about issues, figure out where everybody's head's at, and sort of let them know that we're here for them. And the primary in Indiana is May the 8th, and then we're looking at a general election on, obviously, November 6th.
it's Dan Cannon, canonforindiana.com. What else should people know about you that maybe they don't?
Oh, gosh. That I spent 10 years as a musician.
Really?
Yeah, that was my prior life. You alluded to prior lives. So I had about 10 years as a professional musician, sort of getting around in all these sort of places where most lawyers don't go, I guess, playing lots of clubs and meeting lots of people and hearing lots of different stories. And I think, you know, I feel about being a musician a lot the same way that I do about being a lawyer. It's like these are different ways to have sort of a backstage pass to life. And, you know, you get to interact with people in a way that you wouldn't just, you know, making small talk or just meeting somebody on the street. You know, you get to have a more in-depth look at people's lives, and you get to understand the real problems that people face in middle America, and you get to work with them on real solutions. And that's what I've been dedicated to my whole life, and that's what I hope to continue to do in Congress.
Sounds great. CannonForIndiana.com is the website. You can follow Dan Cannon on Twitter at CannonForIndiana. Dan, it's a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much, and best of luck. We're here if we can ever help out with anything.
Thank you, Nicole.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. And with that, we're done for the day and for the week. Now, don't forget, Monday on Progressive Voices, we move to 6 p.m. Eastern. The live show will still be from 3 to 4 Eastern at NicoleSandler.com, but on Progressive Voices, we'll be on a delay. All right? Have a great weekend, everyone. We'll see you Monday. And take an E.